Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, February the 20th, 2015. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Cynthia Ganatra.
Hello.
And Alyssa Ray.
Hi.
And our control room tech trainee, Amir Ali.
Hi.
Jackie is away today, and we also have Beck sitting in the studio today, plus a special furry guest. Welcome, everyone. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at coopradio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org. After airing. For our first interview and discussion today, we'll be talking about how to speak to people about fur. In seeing people around the city in the wintertime wearing fur trim on their jackets or maybe even full-on fur coats, do you ever wish you could say something to them to let them know that what they are wearing is a product of torture and death, and that it's not okay to treat animals in this way, which is what they are supporting when they pay money for these garments? We'll be chatting with local activist Almira Tanner to share some of her insights in her own experiences, and we'll be talking about our experiences as well in speaking to strangers about fur, and we'll be offering some important info to hopefully be able to empower you to be able to take that stand for the animals. And for our feature interview today, we have an activist profile with Elaine Hendricks. Elaine lives in Los Angeles and is an amazing advocate for the animals and has so much wisdom to share when it comes to protecting our non-human friends. You might best know her as a film and TV actress. She's been in such films as The Parent Trap and Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion, but her utmost passion lies in animal rights and fighting for the animals. She'll be on the show today to speak about her activism for the animals and to inspire us with her knowledge and philosophies when it comes to being a voice for the voiceless in all kinds of capacities. And so today is officially Love a Companion Animal Day, and February is also Responsible Animal Guardian Month, which ties in perfectly to much of what Elaine will have to share with us today in her work to encourage fostering and adoption. But also, we have a companion animal right here in the studio today who I happen to love. I hope we all do. Cynthia, who have you brought for us to be a special guest on today's show?
Yeah, so today I have Apple with me. Apple is a very tiny Pomeranian. She's literally 3 pounds. Originally, she was born in by a breeder, and the owners who purchased her let her go quite quickly. I guess they moved back to whichever original country they were from. So then Apple was put in a foster home, and from there, my friends adopted her. And so, you know, we're talking about dogs and adoption. So every time a dog is bought from a breeder, that is another dog who's in a shelter or a kitten or any animal that loses its chance of having a home and will be euthanized. So essentially, breeders kill shelter animals. And I found out that 25% of all shelter animals are actually purebreds like Apple. So Apple is small. Hopefully, she'll have no problems. But inbreeding can cause painful and life-threatening genetic defects such as hip dysplasia, deafness, heart defects, skin problems, and epilepsy. So hopefully, Apple will be fine. She seems in pretty good health. She was chatting earlier, but she's a little bit quiet now. Let's see. Apple, do you want to say something? No, she's just, but she was growling and barking.
But the first time I heard her bark was today. It was a little, like a little woof. I don't know. I can't do it.
Yeah, she's tiny. I think we posted a photo of her so you can actually see exactly how teeny tiny she is.
I just posted a photo of her on Facebook if you want to check that out. She's the sweetest little dog. Our Facebook is Animal Voices Vancouver. And I always find it really interesting when people, one of the reasons they say is that they don't want to get an animal from a shelter is because they want a certain breed. But it's so true that any breed you want, you can find in a shelter. So, and you just gave that statistic, 25%. But there's also rescue groups for certain breeds as well. So if you're particularly looking for a certain type of breed, such as a sweet little Pomeranian like Apple here, then there's definitely there's a small dog rescue in BC, for example. Alyssa, you have a companion animal right now too, right?
Oh, I don't know. I do, but I guess I'm more interested in the discussion on mm-hmm. breeding and why. There's a really good BBC documentary that you can find on YouTube about breeding and the kind of all the gross stuff involved in that and all the health issues that the dogs have. And I don't know, honestly, yeah, when people talk mm-hmm. about breeds of dogs, it just kind of makes me sad. Like, I don't really care what breeds they are. Like, I care about the individuals, mm-hmm. and I guess I am what you would call, like, not really a dog person. Mm-hmm. So it's just very strange because, like with cats, you know, people don't talk about breeds as much.
Yeah,
it's,
right.
And it's very much seems like a designer thing. Like, we're trying to mm-hmm. make these, like, you know, create these beings just to please us, to look how we want them to look. And it just, it's icky to me.
And also you were saying earlier how, you know, I mean, we all love Apple, but, you know, it's very, very difficult to see her origins as a wolf. And that's because, you know, we've cultivated and curated her to fit our needs and our desires and comfort us. And pets have become about us. And this is really like pets instead of companion animals. Mm-hmm. But it's worthwhile thinking of them otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just one more point, Alyssa, you were saying that, for example, fostering is actually an important way that you can help as well. If you can't adopt an animal and you have a lead on some fostering that needs to happen.
Well, if you're around the Vancouver area, there's a couple of fosters I know of. I don't know about a dog fostering option, but Vocra, of course, Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue, they always need people. If you're not ready to fully commit to a cat, you can have a cat in your home for a while until they're adopted out. And another one is the Small Animal Rescue Society. They need help with finding fosters for rabbits and such. So, you know, yeah, if you're not ready to fully commit, there's lots of ways that we can help companion animals.
Roots Reggae, heard every Friday night from midnight till 7 a.m. This is where we spread a little one love message, reminding you to lift as you climb. Don't leave anyone behind. So get on board the reggae train and let's take it to a higher level. Roots Reggae, filled with substance, yet substance free. Check us out online at www.cooperadio.org. Tell your neighbors, tell your family and friends, it's commercial free and full of vibes. There's a message in the music, and the music is the message. Roots Reggae, every Friday night from midnight till daylight.
In events, we have February 28th, Direct Action Everywhere is having their demo called Truth Matters. The demo will be targeting Whole Foods for their humane washing. In February, activists across the world will secretly enter spaces that promote violence against animals and cover their eyes with dark cloths and hold placards saying Truth Matters. They will metaphorically uncover their eyes and ask others to do the same and show Whole Foods and the world the truth. A recent undercover investigation and open rescue by Direct Action Everywhere showed horrible conditions on an egg-laying facility that supplies Whole Foods. So they'll also tell the story of two of the chickens that they rescued from this facility. And so that is on February 28th, and that is by Direct Action Everywhere. So if you're in Vancouver, it's Direct Action Everywhere, Vancouver Coast Salish Territory. So you can find them on Facebook there. And if you're listening from somewhere else, you can go to Direct Action Everywhere's page and find a demo in your area. So that's February 28th. I know I will be there. Anybody else going?
I don't think so. Are you going?
I think I'm going to join the action in going on in Chicago.
Oh, yes. Yeah. In Chicago.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So worldwide.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Yeah. So
and I just want to say about that, like, why Whole Foods? Are we, you know, are we calling for a boycott, or like, why are we focusing on Whole Foods? And I think just it's important to express that no, we're not calling for a boycott. We're choosing them, or DXE, Direct Action Everywhere, is choosing them as a target because they are the people most actively putting money and resources into promoting the lie that animals can be killed humanely. So that's what we're calling them on.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. And so also on February 28th is another event in, and this one is in Vancouver, and it is Vegan Prom. So Vegan Prom is a fun-filled night filled with dancing, music, yummy food, and prizes. And for those people who drink, there's also a bar with Barnivore-approved vegan alcohol. And so this year's theme is a masquerade. The organizers say costumes are not required but strongly encouraged. In keeping with the spirit of veganism and compassion for animals, they ask that all costumes are free of animal products. This includes real feathers, leather, wool, silk, suede. If you're unsure, please contact the organizers. And so, yeah, February 28th at Wise Hall in Vancouver. Tickets are at veganprom.ca, and they're $20 if you buy early, or $22 at the door. But I suggest you buy early just in case they're sold out, because I think every vegan I know is going, and I know a few. So
I think that's actually a great bargain for everything you get. Like, if you can imagine if going out to a place where there's dancing all night and just fun and great food, I should say, and which is included, and this only comes, it seems like it only comes up once every 2 years, so
yeah,
it's definitely the night to be at. And I don't think you need to be vegan even to go.
No,
I'm definitely trying to drag my non-vegan friend to come out.
Yeah.
Yeah, he asked me, is it a vegan event? Because I haven't told him that part yet, and I had to admit yes. And so he said he would talk to me about it later.
Yeah, there's definitely, on their website, they even say, you know, vegan, vegetarian, or allies who want to come and check out the event. And there's lots of prizes as well. I think there's a raffle, but they're just giving out general prizes. So it'll be, you get a lot for $20. I ate a lot of food last year, and that's when I discovered coconut bacon. I feel like I've talked about this before.
You have talked about this before.
I love coconut bacon.
Oh, my gosh.
Mention that. So if you have an animal-friendly event that you'd like us to say on the radio, please contact us at animalvoices@gmail.com.
Radio Animal Voices.
Radio Animal Voices at gmail.com.
It's been a while since you've been here. So for our first segment today, we're going to be offering tips and advice on how to speak to people about fur. So what do you do when you see someone on the street, on the bus, or perhaps at school who is wearing the fur of animals as clothing? It could be a fur trim on a hat, on their boots, or perhaps even a full-on fur coat. How do we empower ourselves with the knowledge and the confidence it takes to be a voice for the voiceless and to approach people who are either knowingly or unknowingly participating in the brutal torture of animals by wearing their fur? We have local animal activist Almira Tanner here with us today to discuss with us her insights into these questions, and we'll be offering some tips and advice on how to speak to people about fur. Hello, Almira, and welcome back to the Animal Voices show.
Hi there.
Hi, and thanks for being on the show today to help discuss a subject that takes us a step forward in activism for the animals that may really be out of the comfort zone of many when it comes to speaking to people about animal issues, and that is speaking to someone who we probably don't know about the fur they are wearing. So I know that you actively participate in this kind of activism where you will engage in a dialogue with a person wearing fur. So first, why do you think it's important to do that, to say something to a person when you see them wearing fur?
Well, I think it's important for a variety of reasons. One, it's important for that individual to get the education that they might not already have about what is involved in the fur industry, or maybe even the education that they're wearing fur at all. The other thing is, I think we need to create a culture where it's socially unacceptable to wear fur and to wear other products of animal suffering. So I want to be clear that I don't think fur is necessarily worse or better than leather. They're all products that I want to see eliminated, but right now we're talking about fur. So we do want to make it unacceptable to wear it in public, and create a culture where we are comfortable calling out violence and oppression. Usually we are pretty comfortable if somebody would say something very racist or sexist, we would not just let them get away with saying something like that, and we need to get to that level with calling out speciesism as well.
Yeah, I really like that. I really like the idea of making it not a culturally acceptable thing to be doing, and to really calling people out for their actions. Although I do want to acknowledge too that a lot of people are just ignorant and they don't really know what they're wearing. So we'll talk about that. I know that there's maybe a few methods of approach that a person might take when if you're seeing someone on the street wearing fur. So first, do you assume that they know they are wearing real fur or not?
I usually assume they don't know they're wearing real fur, mostly because right now what we're seeing a lot is people wearing fur trim jackets, not a lot of people walking down the street wearing full-blown fur coats. And I think if you are doing that, like you're wearing a full fur coat, you know what you're wearing. But a lot of people wearing fur trim don't know what they're wearing, and that might be just because they didn't bother to look or because it was actually labeled as faux. So I think approaching them with a, like, do you know that you're wearing fur, or is that real fur, will give you kind of an indication as to what their knowledge is. Sometimes I say, oh, do you know that that's real fur, and they'll kind of brag about it, like, oh yeah, it is, and then I take maybe a little bit more of an angry approach with them, whereas some people are just completely unaware.
So if they're unaware, I like to think of, you know, speaking to someone with compassion, because perhaps maybe even just drawing from your own experience of saying, like, oh yeah, you know, I didn't know what went into the production of fur, but did you know that this and this happens to the animals? Is that an approach you take to people who just really don't know and they're just ignorant?
Yeah, I do kind of let them know the process of, like, what happens to animals who are used in the fur industry, and also just about our labeling laws here in Canada. A lot of people, I mean, they might be great actors, I don't know, but a lot of people do seem genuinely surprised that they are wearing fur. They didn't know, and they kind of made an effort to buy something that wasn't fur, and now they're wearing it. And a lot of times they think, oh, this jacket wasn't very expensive, so therefore it can't be real. So providing education on what the laws or kind of how things are labeled in Canada is important as well, and giving them some tips on what to look for in a jacket when they're buying one next time, so they don't make the same mistake.
So we have Beck here in the studio with us as a guest, and I'm just wondering, Beck, do you have experience in speaking to people on the street who you see wearing fur, and if so, how do you approach them?
Yeah, to an extent I do, and I think one of the best excuses or misinformations I've heard was that they think that fur is simply shaven off the animal, and so, you know, and it's thought of as a renewable resource, and that cruelty isn't necessarily implicit in fur. And to that I like to respond, you know, please do check that your fur, you know, an indication that it is real is that it's still attached to the skin. So it's impossible for the animal to remain alive, of course, after its skin is stripped. And then another test, which I like to suggest, is to simply go on YouTube and watch the trapping of animals and decide for yourself whether that's humane or not. And I think the answer is quite clear.
Alyssa, I know that you have some approaches that you've taken in the past. Can you share those with us with, say, people that you know who, they know they're wearing fur, or you're pretty sure that you know that they're wearing fur, and then people who you're probably pretty sure that they just don't know?
I am a little bit uncomfortable with the kind of like shaming. Yeah, because well, one thing that comes up is people think of like throwing red paint on fur, just screaming at women, or just being like, you know, like really negative. So I'm not like a huge fan of that, I guess. Although I don't know, you know, there's nuance there, but I prefer I like to make a note for someone, and that's been pretty successful. I've had good conversations and people saying like, oh, I really didn't know. And like, and another one, I just kind of like to, just when I'm just feeling in a different mood, I might just say, oh, there's blood on your jacket. And then I just, because it takes them a second to figure it out, and then they figure it out. And I kind of just leave it at that. And I kind of just give them a look like, mm-mm. Like I just shake my head like, you know, like that's wrong.
Amira, do you ever do anything like that if you know that, like, say they're wearing a Canada Goose jacket that costs $700 and you're pretty sure they know? What's your approach there?
Yeah, Canada Goose is a pretty well-known brand, at least in Vancouver, Canada. A lot of people buy those jackets because they think, you know, they're Canadian-made, and the animals are trapped, you know, humanely in the wild, and they spend, you know, up to $1,000 on jackets like this. So I'm pretty confident that people know that they are wearing real fur, and I still like to approach them with compassion. I have some Canada Goose specific leaflets that I sometimes carry with me, and just I let them know that they're wearing a wild animal that suffered immensely for their $1,000 status symbol. And, you know, you sometimes get answers like kind of Beck was saying, oh, it's humane. And then you can explain what actually goes into creating fur, and which involves trapping of an animal who wanted to live, and often a lot of suffering in the traps for that animal. And a lot of people, I mean, they're upset for multiple reasons. One, they were just called out in public, but also this $1,000 they spent, they are realizing that that's the product of a lot of unnecessary suffering. And I think it is really important that we do call that out when we see it, so that those people can know that fashion is not an excuse for violence.
Yeah, exactly. And I like that you say sometimes you're fully prepared. You've got leaflets on you. So I know. I was thinking, how can I do that if I'm only, I'd have to go back to just being the kind of student type who always wears a big backpack full with all the supplies I could possibly ever want and all these different animal rights brochures based on what I might come across. And I used to do that too. So I actually did post a link to a pamphlet on fur, which is actually in Chinese and in English. It's from the liberationbc.org website, and it's posted on our website now to animalvoices.org. I didn't know about that Canada Goose leaflet, so maybe if there's some way you could pass it on to me, I could maybe make that available to our listeners as well. I just want people, I think it's, you know, having the opportunity to speak to someone who you see, like Alyssa said, on the bus, or you're seeing them on the street, it doesn't give you that much chance to have a dialogue. So I would you agree that, like, you sort of have to judge how what the situation calls for? What do you think about that?
Yeah, definitely. I'm just thinking also about Canada Goose, the fact that it's full of feathers. Like, we also need to remember that it's full of down, and we've done a few shows on, you know, the cruelty behind plucking birds for their feathers. And so does that leaflet have anything about the down as well, Amira?
No, this is a fur bearer defenders leaflet, okay. So it's definitely focused on fur. One thing I do want to mention, though, is some people in Toronto, and they're on their, it's in the process of being shipped here, but they made these patches that say, like, it's like fur and feathers with like a line through it, like no fur, no feathers, and they look exactly like the logo on the Canada Goose jacket. And people are wearing that, like no fur, no feathers, on their jackets. And it's, I think that's a really good statement too, because people will think, like, oh, you know, like this is a Canada, it looks like Canada Goose, and then they can read the message and it's pretty clear. And that addresses the issue of down too, which we don't want to overlook as well.
Right, that's a whole nother issue. So we only have a couple minutes left, and I just wanted to end on this question is, yeah, this all sounds fine and good, but how do we get the confidence to actually speak to people who are often total strangers about something so personal? Alyssa, what do you think about that?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I do it. Mm-hmm. I do it because I can't not do it. Like, right. Maybe I used to be afraid, but now, because, you know, you develop confidence after you've tried a couple times and you have a couple good reactions and it's not as scary as you think, then I develop the confidence and now I can't not say something. And I feel my heart starts pounding. I have to speak the truth. And the way I keep doing it, because I think, like, well, maybe I'm not really affecting that person. I don't know. But it's healing for me to speak my truth, regardless of the effect. That's kind of how I see it. I'm like, maybe I'm not making a big effect, but in that little moment, I spoke truth and to cruelty, and I feel good. I don't know.
I really like what you say too, is you just make yourself do it, because I think if you practice that activism muscle, it'll become easier and easier. Almira, what are your experiences with doing that? Because I know you're quite outspoken.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, it's uncomfortable and I'm nervous, even though I've done it a lot of times, and I just try to kind of, like Alyssa, live with that discomfort and know that it's something that I have to do. And a lot of times, it's not even just that individual who you are affecting. It's everybody else on that bus or in that area that is going to hear it and say, like, wow, this person, like, obviously really cares about other animals, because they're willing to do this somewhat socially unacceptable thing to stand up for them. And sometimes, like, when I was really nervous at the beginning, you can do it kind of where you have an exit, like you're just about to leave the bus, and you can just hand the person a leaflet. It's great to have a follow-up conversation with that person, so it's probably not ideal to do it like that, but for the first few times, if you're really nervous, that's what I did, and then you can just kind of walk away and, you know, kind of have a little breathing session by yourself outside to recuperate. But yeah,
right.
I think just doing it, kind of ripping that Band-Aid off and just going and trying it. And it's okay to be nervous.
Well, just do it. That's what I got from this. And I am going to start doing it. And that's partially why I wanted to discuss it, is to empower myself as well. Thank you, Amira, and everyone else for speaking from your own experiences and on advice on how to give, on how to speak to people about fur. And I really do hope that this will empower our listeners to take that step forward, to speak from their hearts, to give a voice to the voiceless. Thanks, Amira. Have a good day.
Thank you.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver's Co-op Radio, on unceded Coast Salish territories. So now in the news, out of Australia, Australia's greyhound racers have been accused of horrible cruelty after secretly filmed footage by Animals Australia and Animal Liberation Queensland showed trainers using live rabbits, possums, and piglets to coach their dogs. Despite the practice known as live baiting being illegal in Australia, graphic footage has revealed that the practice is widespread and that well-known trainers have been using small animals as lures to make their greyhounds more bloodthirsty and supposedly make them better racers. In one instance, John Thompson, a trainer, was filmed instructing a colleague on how to smash a baby possum's head to enable the live baiting of her mother. That is just... Yeah, I didn't watch the video because I read the article first and I was just so horrified mm-hmm. that I was like, I do not need to watch another horrific mm-hmm. undercover video footage.
Do you know if this is like a sponsored event or?
Yeah, so actually that's one other thing. So it's they're sponsored events, usually the greyhound racing. So what Animal Australia and Animal Liberation Queensland did was, on part of their website, they listed the sponsors of the event and then they had links to their Facebook, to their websites, so their Twitter, so that you can tweet them, Facebook them, email them, call them to get the sponsors to withdraw. And on their website, when I looked today, they had 7 out of 8 sponsors withdraw.
Wow,
and really large sponsors like Schweppes and, unfortunately, McDonald's. I'm sure McDonald's is doing it for, you know, Alyssa had mentioned earlier, greenwashing. And some other large, like, I think it was like Mazda, so big car dealerships. So really large corporations have withdrawn support. So hopefully this will do something to end the greyhound racing, because we know greyhound racing itself is inherently cruel.
Well, all animal racing, yeah.
Exactly.
Here in Canada, we're not so familiar with greyhound racing. I don't think
I've never heard of it
very
here.
Big here
horse
at
racing.
All. But horse racing, yeah.
Yeah.
Similar issues. Like, I appreciate that this, you know, that the activists here focused on the live baiting to, like, kind of bring attention to the whole issue, but hopefully it brings down the whole, you know, racing industry in that area.
And public pressure works,
yeah,
as we're seeing.
Yeah, and I was reading the article, and it was really great to see that they weren't just talking about live baiting. They were also talking about how many greyhounds get put down every year after they're no longer useful in the industry. So it's really shedding on light. A lot of people don't know what happens behind these industries. Even with horse racing, they think the horses are well taken care of and that they, you know, live happily on some farm after they're no longer racing. But, you know, that is not often the case. And so it's really good that this is becoming news in Australia. And so hopefully something will be done by this. I know that the MPs involved released some statements saying that they were horrified. And so there's a petition trying to get a greyhound racing banned. And I think 20 people across 3 different states have been suspended from their jobs. And so they can't really say it's an isolated incident because they found it quite rampant in the industry, which is good, because unfortunately we see when these undercover videos come out that they like to say that this is just one case, but they're seeing that this is more than one case. So.
Well, thanks. That's definitely not something that I know very much about. Maybe it's something we could cover more on the show at a later time. Thanks for the news, Cynthia. You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio. And our feature interview today is an activist profile with Elaine Hendricks. While Elaine may best be known as a Hollywood film and television actress, the nearest and dearest thing to her heart is animal rights. Being an advocate for the humane treatment of animals is Elaine's greatest passion. She's involved with numerous organizations across the country and spends a great deal of her time traveling to rescue, lobby, testify, protest, educate, and build new habitats on their behalf. Elaine is on the show today today to speak about her activism and what fuels her passions to act for the animals. And she also has just launched a new podcast on animal issues this week, which she will be talking about too. Hello, Elaine, and welcome to the Animal Voices Show.
Thank you, Allison. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show today, Elaine, to speak about your animal activism work. Can you start by telling us your story of how you grew up and came to care for animals and how your ideals were formed to dedicate your passions to working for animals?
Sure. I grew up in a small town in Tennessee, in East Tennessee, basically the foothills of the Smoky Mountains. And so in that environment, I was very nature oriented, outside all the time, trees, fields, running around like wild banshees, and grew up with animals. And my family was very community oriented. So I was raised to get involved. And so as I got older, all of that tradition and all of that lifestyle stayed with me, and to the point where once I started becoming an actress and was having some success with it, I started getting invited to all these different events, different charity events, and I would show up to any and all that I could because that's how I was raised and it's what I like to do. And then I just at one point felt like, you know, I'm doing all this, but I couldn't say that I was having any type of measurable impact. And so I literally sat down at my computer and was like, okay, I want to figure out what is going to be my message, my platform, so I could stick with one cause and really dig in. And with the childhood that I had, and because I loved animals so much, looking back, it should have been obvious, but it wasn't. It took me watching an undercover fur video to understand really what was happening to animals, because I think, like most people, I love animals, but I had no idea what was happening to them. And my reaction to this video was so visceral. It was as if somebody had kicked me in the stomach, and I doubled over and I was sobbing uncontrollably because I was watching an animal get skinned alive. And it just absolutely blew my mind. So from that point forward, it changed my life completely. I went through my home and I pulled out everything that I could find that had been tested on animals. I had a leather interior in my car. I got a new car. I was already a vegetarian, but then re-upped to becoming a vegan, and threw out all the leather in my home. And, you know, I just, from that point forward, have absolutely dedicated everything I can to helping animals.
Well, the public may best know you as being an actress in numerous films and television show, and I know you've done an off-Broadway play as well, and you've also worked as a professional model and dancer, so you're really in touch with the entertainment industry. It's your life, and it's been a large part of your history. So I'm curious to know, in the entertainment history, what have you observed as being, say, the general outlook on animal rights, and how have you observed animals being used in the industry? Is it something that is even really acknowledged, or has it been progressing in recent years, would you say?
I think it has been progressing. The entertainment industry tends to be a liberal one, being part of the arts, and they tend to be cause-oriented. I like to think so anyway. So animals in entertainment, that absolutely has changed. We now have organizations that are overseeing the filming that uses animals, and people are more aware. That's not to say that horrible things still don't happen. They do, very sadly. But there's been a much greater awareness of it. As far as like using products that test on animals, I know for myself, when I go in to a project, hair and makeup people will inevitably say to me, okay, so, you know, what are your preferences? What works on you? What doesn't? What do you like? What you don't like? And the first thing I always say is I really prefer products that aren't tested on animals. And that is a fairly common request now, because nobody bats an eye. They're like, okay, yep, got it. And here's this and here's that. So I think that in that aspect, it's becoming much more mainstream. And then certainly with performers, we're spreading the word. I know more and more people in the spotlight and people in the industry are starting to speak up for animals. So I like to think that we all are making a big difference, and certainly the entertainment industry, media, sets the tone and sets the precedent for the rest of the world, really. And it's important, because people wouldn't know about it if the, you know, entertainment industry and media weren't talking about it. So I do think we're making big strides.
Well, I'd like to talk to you about your work in animal rescue. I know this is a large part of your life. You've worked with numerous rescues, and you're also a founder of the Pet Matchmaker Foundation. Can you start by just telling us about some of the work that you do and have done in rescuing animals and finding them forever homes?
Yeah, that it's what I very first started volunteering with an organization in Beverly Hills, who they work with the city shelter to get animals into new homes. And they work with various programs for spay neutering and fostering and whatnot. But I would show up at adoption events, and I would literally be like a concierge, a liaison between learning as much as I could about the animals who were there, and then anyone who was around and were interested in the animals, I would talk and I would try to bridge and find the perfect animal for them. And that's what has now eventually become the Pet Matchmaker. That's grown. But in between that time, I do work with many, many organizations. I was trained in large-scale rescues, so busting puppy mills, hoarders, fighting rings, working with large numbers, hundreds of animals. That's where I was trained in rescue. And then I also do, just on my own, fostering and still a lot of pet matchmaking. So, yeah, and I do travel anywhere I can and show up, and anyone I can help, I definitely do that.
Well, I see a beautiful dog in the background who's just needs a comfortable spot on your couch. Is he or she a rescue?
Of course. There's only rescues in my household. That's Ellie. Anyone who finds me or sees me is going to see a picture of Ellie, is going to know about Ellie. I've had her since she was less than a week old. I got her along with mom and the whole litter, fostered them, got them all good homes. And she's just one. I've got four in the household, two dogs and two cats, because in my home, the motto is everybody gets a friend.
That's amazing. I was actually just telling my sister this week, because she has a new family in the States and in a house, right? I don't live in a house. And I said to her, and she showed me a few pictures of shelter dogs that she had been looking at. And I said, if I were you, I would get a pack of dogs from the shelter. Like, just do it, because you have the resources to do that. So I've seen videos of you doing like these large scale rescues, such as in hoarding situations and puppy mills. Perhaps could you just tell us maybe about, if you could choose one really impactful experience that you could describe to us about that situation? I want to learn more about why it's so important to adopt animals. Where are they coming from?
Yeah, okay. Well, so just a few of the facts real quick. Still in the United States alone, there are 4 to 6 million animals euthanized every year. And that's just a fancy word for killed. And our taxpayers' dollars are going to do that. So we got 4 to 6 million animals being killed simply because they don't have a home. And though that number has decreased from about 20 years ago, when it was about 20 million at that time. So we've come a long way, but 4 to 6 million, that's a huge number. And that's a lot of wasted resources on so many levels, wasted lives, wasted money, wasted time and energy. So if people could spay and neuter their animals more, and if they could go to rescue groups or shelters and adopt their next family members, those numbers are going to keep going down. And maybe some people are like, well, I can't have a dog full time, or I can't have a cat, I can't have a pet full time, or I've already got pets, but you know, I want to help some more. Fostering is a really great option. And by doing this, we're going to keep seeing those numbers decrease. We're down from 20 to 25 million to 4 to 6 million, and we want to see it down to zero. Because this, again, is just in the United States, and that doesn't count the rest of the world who has, you know, an epidemic of homeless pets. And that's largely why I started the Pet Matchmaker, because our mission is to celebrate and inspire the rescue, foster, and adoption of homeless pets everywhere. And we have a lot of information about it and a lot of great stories on the website.
So if you could just like describe maybe an experience you've had going into a dire rescue situation, what is that like?
So, oh yes, because where they come from, puppy stores and online come from the animals from there. Let's talk specifically about dogs, come from puppy mills. And so you go into a puppy mill. I'll describe one of the very first rescues I did of a puppy mill. We showed up to this woman's property and she had, I think, 20 dogs maybe. And they were, there were these rabbit hutches all over the property. So they were on stilts. They were like wooden boxes on stilts. The floors of them weren't solid. The floors of them are wire so that their waste goes all the way through, because these animals do not leave these boxes, especially the mother dogs. They stay in there and produce litter after litter after litter. They receive no vet care. They never touch ground. They don't get held. And in this particular case, the boxes were also wrapped in plastic because it was really cold out. And we show up, there were at least two, if not three, dead dogs we found and puppies trying to cuddle with these dead animals to keep warm. And the feces piled under these rabbit hutches were a good 2 feet tall. It was one of the most horrific, disturbing, disgusting things I had ever seen. I mean, her entire property, nobody was cleaning it. Nobody was caring for these animals. And a lot of them were very sick. All of the females had just been bred over and over and over. And it's no way for any animal to live, much less man's best friend. And these are the dogs that then get sold to pet stores and get sold online. And they have very fancy fronts to them, but the animals are coming from hell. And 9.9 times out of 10, they have severe health issues.
Yeah, definitely. There's so many problems with buying animals in those situations and buying at all, I think. So I want to talk about a brand new podcast that you've started this week as part of the Pet Matchmaker Foundation. Can you please tell us about what the podcast's all about?
Yeah, we launched for the first time this past Tuesday, February 17th was our very first podcast. And on each show, we have an advocate, a celebrity guest, different experts pop in and out. It's all a wide spectrum of pet topics, but we're doing it in a really fun, entertaining way, because I believe that you can attract more ants with honey. So we're having a lot of fun doing it, and I hope people will check it out. And there's going to be, it's free. It's free to download, and there's going to be a new show out every Tuesday.
Great. So you've said that, yeah, that people fall into three categories when it comes to their views on animals. The first category is they have no idea what is happening to animals. Second category, they have some idea what is happening to animals. And the third category is they know what is happening to animals, and their most common response is that they have no idea what to do to help them. So what do you have to say to people who have this response, people who want to help but who have no idea where to start?
Well, I say first start in your own home. So if you have a pet in your own home, make sure that pet is fixed, that you are not contributing to the pet overpopulation problem. And then next, I would say do some research of organizations that are in your local community, a shelter, a rescue group, somebody who's doing transport. You know, that's what the power of the internet is for now. And then the third thing I would say, at the end of the day, all of this, every issue that animals have boils down to the almighty dollar. And so the way you spend your money makes a huge difference. Don't buy animals. Don't buy products that test on animals. If you're asking me, I'm going to say go vegan. So, you know, buy food that is supports life and doesn't support death. So those are three very specific ways. Start with who's in your home, get involved in who's locally around you, and then the most important of all is how you spend your money.
Great advice. Well, I want to talk about how you've used celebrity to advocate for the animals and what you suggest for pursuing one's passion when it comes to animal activism. I, for one, strongly believe in using the skills and the gifts that you have to do good work for what you believe in. And if that's animal activism, then that's great. So what would you suggest to people? And if you can just talk about how you've utilized your gifts and talents to do so.
Oh, thanks. Well, everybody does have gifts and strengths. I absolutely agree with that. And mine originally fell with entertaining. So in building the Pet Matchmaker, that's what we've centered around media, stories. We have stories online. We still tell stories through pictures. Now stories through the podcast, and we're going to keep doing that. So entertainment and storytelling is how I'm really honing my advocacy and using that. But some people, you know, maybe they have a talent for tech. Maybe they have a talent for design. Maybe they have a talent for writing. Again, reaching out to, you can certainly contact me at the Pet Matchmaker. We're always looking for people to work with us. But, you know, research issues that are important to you and reach out to organizations because they need help. Every single organization needs help. They need money. They need time and they need hands on deck. So whatever your talent is, I guarantee you there's going to be an organization out there who's going to need them.
I think too, sometimes just something that I want to recognize is what's happening to the animals in this world is really often quite awful. And it's come up a few times in my life in recent weeks, actually, when I've heard of people just saying that they can't process what's happening to animals. They can't get past the pain. They just don't want to think about it. So what would you say to people like that? And how does one find the strength and their voice to act for the animals, the ones who don't have a voice?
Yeah, you know, in the animal advocacy world, it's called compassion fatigue. People get burned out. Well, there's people who get burned out on it, and then there's people who, like you say, feel like they can't even go there. They can't even step into the arena because it's too intense. And here's what I would say to that. If you think it's intense for you to watch what's happening, then please consider how intense it is to experience what's happening and weigh which is more important. Weigh what the impact could potentially be. If you can get past, if you can find ways to support yourself and to dig into your own courage and your own strength, think about the suffering that you could alleviate. If you just turn a blind eye because it's too hard for you, that doesn't do anything. The suffering is going to keep happening, whether you're watching or not, whether you're paying attention or not. The suffering is going to keep happening. So for their sake, dig in, find the courage. There's also a lot of ways that you don't have to actively like look at things, look at images or see what's happening. You can still send money. You can, you know, post notices online. I mean, there's still so much to do. We have to get beyond our own fears for their sake.
Well, thank you for that. So one question that I like to ask in our activist profiles are about sort of just some influences that they've had in their life. So what are some books, films, and or people who have inspired you in your growth to becoming an activist for the animals?
Oh, you know, the movie Star Wars.
Interesting. Haven't heard that one before.
Yeah. I think Star Wars is one of the greatest representations of the hero's journey. And I think it's a very spiritual movie. And so to me, that applies in pretty much every facet of my life, and it certainly applies to advocacy. The idea of the force, that we all have this energy that lives within us, and we can use that force for good or we can use that force for evil. And there's a lot of people out there using the force for evil towards animals, and me, I want to use the force for good. And so I very oftentimes, when we're doing rescues or people are, you know, that I work with are going out to take an action or do something for animals, I will very often say to them, may the force be with you.
That's awesome. So speaking of the force being with you, I wish you that this weekend, because you are going to be attending a protest in Knoxville, Tennessee, against the Ringling Brothers. Can you tell us about that, please?
Yes. Well, circuses are hell holes for elephants and for all animals, but we're especially targeting the elephants there because they receive so much abuse. It has been well documented that Ringling Brothers is a prime culprit of that. They're number one culprit of that. So activists all around the world are doing everything they can, and I being one of them, to get animal circuses shut down, to get animals out of circuses. And so I'm really proud. I'm originally from East Tennessee, and it's a conservative state. And so Knoxville is a relatively, it's a big city in the state of Tennessee, but compared to other big cities, it's a small city. And so I'm really proud of the people who have put it together. It's not my protest. It's not my rally. I didn't do it. I'm just showing up, and I'm very proud to do so because I want to see animals get out of circuses.
Well, thank you for that. Last question for you. As someone who has been passionate about and active in the movement for many years, what do you predict is on the horizon for animal rights and veganism in the future, say in 5, 10, or even 20 years ahead?
Boy, that's a tough question, because the optimist in me wants to say that we can abolish the suffering of animals, and I, of course, work to that end. And then there's the pessimist in me who sees and knows what I deal with, and not just me. I mean, there's people who are way deeper in this than I am, but knowing what we face on a daily basis, it can be hard to think that we'll ever reach that end. But I think in 5, 10, 20 years, I think the most I can say is that we're going to continue to have progress. We're going to continue to do good for animals and to see their suffering alleviated. There's so many more laws now that are being passed. There's so much more information out there. People are starting to become awake to this issue. People are starting to care about this issue because it's really easy for people to say, oh, well, that's animals. Who cares? There's children dying and suffering, and there's old people who's dying and suffering. And to that, I always say, well, yeah, but if you go take care of them, and somebody else goes to take care of the elderly, and someone else takes care of the trees, and we're over here take care of the animals, then we can make this world an even better place than it is. And just because I'm helping animals doesn't mean that I'm stopping you or hurting you or taking away from you helping children. We're all in this together. And so for the next 5, 10, 20 years, I see progress, and I hope it's big. We've made a lot of little steps, and sometimes we take one step forward and we get two steps back, but we're all out there fighting the good fight, and I think that we're just going to keep seeing progress, and we're going to keep helping animals. To what level? I don't know, but let's check back in 5 and 10 and 20 years and see.
Hopefully we won't need an animal rights show on the radio in that time, but because all the problems will be solved. No, don't think so. I'll probably still be doing it. Well, thank you, Elaine, for coming on the show today to speak about your animal activism and your new podcast called The Pet Matchmaker, which can be heard at thepetmatchmaker.com. And for more information on Elaine's work, you can also visit elainehendricks.com. Thanks, Elaine, and have a great day.
Oh, thank you, Allison. It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, broadcasting live from unceded Coast Salish territories. And that was our interview with Elaine Hendricks. And join us next week's show, Friday, February 27th. I'm going to be producing. It's going to be great. Stay in touch with that. And, of course, keep in touch with us throughout the weeks outside of the show. We'd love to hear from you. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows from our archive or download as podcasts. Take us with you on the go. Listen anytime that's convenient for you. You can read our show blog with detailed links and videos and subscribe to us via iTunes, Animal Voices Vancouver podcast, and learn about upcoming events. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and we also tweet at Animal Voices YVR. Do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either through Facebook or radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We're closing the show with a song by Gaia EC Music called Tell a Friend. They're a Canadian band, I think, from Toronto. This song is about speaking to people about the fur they're wearing. And here's some of the lyrics. Tell the truth to somebody now. That decoration round your neck, dog, cat, rabbit, who you stabbing at next? We put an end to this trend. Stay warm without torture. And tell a friend. Get the facts on that and let no more unnecessary blood. Stay tuned now for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thanks so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.
I see that fur around your neck, and I notice you are human. Do you know now who that come from? Cause it looks real and it's creeping me out. That you're meant to be so cool now. Folks strolling by, what's going on inside? Till you restore it for your giant size. Your puppy, that's your brother, that's a coyote. Wonder if you spoke my language, would you say?